Chapter 11. Next Resort. The summons was far from unexpected, but the hour was inconvenient. The messenger was Fenris Destrier, one of the few people still living in Cadrus with the power to knock unbidden on Kairos's warded door and awaken him. Kairos had been dragged from his full attention in Tellurak unwillingly, and found himself shortchanged in the trade of Soria's affections for Rashan's urgent gathering. Kairos ordered up breakfast as he dressed, refusing to be marched off to the Emperor's audience chamber famished and groggy in his nightclothes. Remembering why the meeting was to take place in the audience chamber, rather than in the inner sanctum, kept him from lingering in his room to enjoy his meal in leisure. A bit of eggs and bread were all he ate, but the teacup and kettle he brought with him, the latter bobbing along just behind him at his command. The palace halls teemed with sorcerers when he reached the ground floor. It looked as if every sorcerer in the city had been summoned, even masters from the academy. There was a crowd backed up, trying to get into the audience chamber, but it parted before Kairos. Men and women who had waited amiably in a tight-packed cluster at the doors jostled and shoved to be out of his way, teapot and all. "They are probably nearly as afraid of me as they are of him." Kairos noticed that there were nobles mixed in among the sorcerers, adding a layer of puzzlement to his deductions. He had assumed the meeting was to be either a haranguing of the Empire's sorcerers, or yet another bloodletting. The colorful attire he was accustomed to seeing the nobles wear to court was scant that morning. Blending in was the order of the day, if one wanted to avoid the warlock's attention. The chamber was filling rapidly, and it appeared as if the gathering might be forced to spill into the outer halls. Emperor Somik sat on his throne, upon the low dais, while Rashan stood beside him, resting a hand on the back of his throne. Kairos noticed that the Emperor leaned away from the hand, as if afraid to brush against it. Beside them were six chairs to each side, one step below the top. Aloysia and Fenris sat in two of them. Rashan stood with an inscrutable expression. Kairos made a mental note never to play crackle with the demon. Whatever direction his morning's plan would take, Rashan gave away nothing by his eyes, face, or posture. Emperor Somik, by contrast, looked ill with worry. He cowered in the restrictive confines of his throne. "Welcome, everyone," Rashan said, voice barely above his normal conversant volume. The room hushed such that, though Rashan spoke quietly, he could be heard from the rear of the chamber. "I would like to introduce you to someone. This man seated here before us is your emperor, Somik the First. This is a very simple fact, yet a number of our colleagues were unable to reconcile it with their vision of how an empire ought to be run. Having now served five of them, please allow me to assure you that an empire requires an emperor. They are quite bound up in the very definition of the word." Rashan removed his hand from the throne, to the emperor's visible relief. He hopped up onto one of the 10 empty chairs on the second step of the dais. "Those who had once schemed to replace an emperor with a construct of ether were killed this past autumn. I had extended leniency to those whose roles were of obedience rather than delegation. I gave them a chance at redemption. Few, far too few, took my great mercy for the gift that it was. The inner sanctum is even now being scrubbed clean of the blood of traitors, who thought that because my eyes looked to our enemies abroad, I did not have able and loyal eyes left behind to watch over their machinations." Rashan spread his arms, indicating the row of a dozen chairs. "9 seats unoccupied, more dead among the inner circle than yet living. I will admit that in a moment of ill temper, I considered disbanding the inner circle and seeing to all the Imperial Circle's affairs myself. I am at least certain of my own continued loyalty to the Kadrin Empire. But no, the inner circle has served the Empire well before and shall again, but with fresh appointees." Rashan stepped down to a more dignified station at the Emperor's side. "You have all been so very quiet. Let us see if we can rouse some life to what must be a number of quite overwrought minds. What virtues must a sorcerer possess to ascend to the heights of the inner circle?" There was silence in the wake of his question. He posed it in the form of an academy master's query. He knew the answers he sought, and awaited correct responses. I wonder what the penalty would be for a wrong answer. The ones that the Academy taught were well ensconced in Brannis's memories. Ah, but no one is talkative this morning. Very well, I shall not force you. He moved over next to Fenris, and laid a hand on the elderly sorcerer's shoulder. Wisdom, Fenris called out, his voice echoing from the vaulted ceiling. Rashan nodded. The warlock kept that hand in place and rested his other hand on Aloysia's shoulder. She perked up, straightening her back before responding. Ambition, she practically shouted, eyes flashing. By all accounts, she ought to have been proud. At that very moment, by rank, she was the third among the entire Imperial Circle. Rashan lifted his hands from the two remaining Inner Circle members and into the air, upturned as he waited. And power, he finished. They were not entirely in line with the ideals that the Academy taught. Scholarship had been replaced by ambition in Rashan's virtues, but Kyrus suspected some more subtle game. He waited for what would come next. 9 positions are available among the Inner Circle. The 9 most worthy candidates will be selected to replace them. I shall choose 3 each who best exemplify my 3 virtues. The 3 wisest among you, the 3 most ambitious from among our rising young sorcerers, and of course the 3 most powerful. The room began to murmur as if it were a living thing. Rashan smiled. He hates idleness, the passive acceptance. He would rather they object than obey. Kyrus looked up, seeking Rashan's gaze. The warlock's eyes lit and his smile grew when he caught Kyrus's look. The demon winked. Ambition. He wants someone to just claim those 3 spots right here. Not me, though. The wink was hint enough to caution Kyrus against spoiling the puzzle for everyone else. Wisdom is a terribly chancy thing to judge in a short time, Rashan said, quieting the room once more. I have several in mind. Fenris will be interviewing them, subject to my final approval. Ambition I have yet to decide on proper criteria for qualification. Kyrus fought to keep a grin from his face. Pride in my own cleverness will get me in trouble one day. As for power, who can resist a draw? Those 3 positions we will fill after lunchtime today, on the Imperial Academy grounds, since I doubt we could fit all our eager onlookers within the palace courtyard. Emperor Somak looked up to Rashan. The warlock nodded to him. This audience is at an end, Somak announced. The room began to clear. Conversations sprung up, especially toward the rear of the chamber, where being overheard by the warlock was less a concern. There was an odd mix of anxiety and excitement. Kyrus pushed his way against the current of sorcerers. He was close to the front to begin with, and none wanted to bar his path, so it was no difficult feat. You killed 9 of the Inner Circle last night, and half the sorcerers of the Circle are leaving with smiles on their faces, Kyrus mused aloud within the warlock's hearing. Oh, that reminds me, Rashan said. He raised his voice and called out over the departing cacophony of conversations. If any of you are missing friends or acquaintances, a number of lesser conspirators were dealt with later last night as well. Check with the blood scholars to whom I have given the names of those whose bloodlines have been trimmed a bit. Kyrus looked at Rashan with incredulity. Rashan caught the look and frowned in reply. Kyrus did not shy, but kept his disapproval written plainly on his face. What? Rashan snapped. I tried the gentle hand last time and the infection festered. This time I just lanced the boil all at once. Kyrus looked at the others who had remained behind. A few guards stood against walls. He caught Varnus's gaze and lingered just a fraction. There were Aloysia and Fenris, risen from their seats but seeming ill-inclined to depart. Emperor Somak had gathered attendants and departed by a rear exit as soon as decorum allowed. It was still not private enough. I would like a word with you in private, Kyrus said to Rashan. He looked at no one else. Hey, Brannis, you cannot just be rid of us. You are just the Emperor's... Aloysia began. Very well, Rashan cut her off. You have other duties to attend. Be about them. Guards, you are dismissed. Fenris chuckled and said not a word. His steps were slower than most in the circle, but none of them took him any direction but away, once he was commanded. Aloysia huffed, looked sorely tempted to make some argument, but ultimately followed in Fenris's path, passed him and disappeared from view. The guards sorted themselves out by the various entrances, and were astute enough to close all doors behind them. "Efficiency! It does get better around here," Rashan said, gazing after the departed guards. "In part, that is what I wish to speak with you about," Kyrus said. Rashan turned, his attention snapping back to Kyrus. "The efficacy of the guardsmen?" Rashan asked, incredulous. "No, of when all things will get better. Bloodlettings in the Sanctum are beginning to become a regularity. We are pressing a war against peoples who no longer have the will or ability to strike back at us. Rain's Dark continues to sit atop a volcano without its ancient wards against eruption. When will we start seeing better?" "I think it will start with an inner circle that no longer devotes its energies to subverting all thought of imperial rule," Rashan said with spread hands. "What about ending the war?" Kyrus asked. "Devoting our efforts to recovering the staff of Galen?" Rashan looked to the floor and shook his head. "You are the least warlike knight I have ever met, Brannis. Why did you even wish to join the knighthood? There are more than two paths in life, sorcerer or knight. You might have made a fine tutor or a scribe, perhaps even a wet nurse." Rashan grinned at him with no mirth in his eyes. Kyrus felt warm. His breathing quickened and he clenched his jaw. "Just because I mislike killing does not mean I am a coward or a craven," Kyrus said through gritted teeth. He matched the warlock's glare a moment, realizing the path he was heading down. He turned away. "You goad me. Why?" "We are all creatures of aggression. I pay attention, you know. You have your points of pride, the soft spots where a sharp word draws blood. Words bear little on me. I have heard too many to fear them. What I cannot abide is violence against either myself or Cadrin. You? You cannot bear being looked down upon or having your worth questioned. You try so hard to take on everything that the thought of inadequacy galls you. I understand you and accept that flaw in your character. I would expect that you will allow for a difference of opinion over how much blood ought to quench the thirst of my indignity. We were attacked. They do not get to choose when they have paid a heavy enough price." "You decide then. When will it be enough?" Kyrus asked, taking a deep breath. Rashan was closer to Danil's height than to his. Kyrus towered over him. The primal part of his brain told him to settle the argument with force. "Boredom is a poor excuse, I suppose," Rashan said. He turned his back to Kyrus and began to pace. "I feel a duty to continue even as I hack apart armies like some maddened farmer among his own chickens. You think I fail to see that?" Rashan whipped around to face Kyrus, who stumbled back a step. "I need some more plausible motive to end it, or I lose credibility." "My counsel?" Kyrus suggested, drawing a skeptical smirk from Rashan. "The advice of the inner circle, once there is one again, that is. An order from the Emperor?" "The latter is laughable. I would lose all credibility if I take orders from that slobbering hedonist." Rashan shook his head. "Your other thought, though, that might have some promise. Return some semblance of power to the circle. That could be useful." "Who are you going to pick?" Kyrus asked. "You must have some inkling already." "No," Rashan replied. "Well, perhaps a little. I took myself nearly out of the selection process this time. I have no natural allies left. I hope to gain a competent inner circle, if not one that is personally loyal to me. Fenris will select three, subject to my approval. Those will not be seated before I next return. The ambitious ones will select themselves. Thank you for not showing them the simplest way. I saw in your eye that you puzzled it out immediately. I have no idea when three more will step forward to claim a place among the inner circle. The two who win the draw later today will have their seats, though." "Two? I think you need three." "Brannis, one of those is yours to claim. I hesitate to let any of them challenge you, let alone encourage it. I know not the lethal range of your draw, nor how strong a mortal source needs to be to withstand it in full force. By the winds, you might even slay your opponent. That would be unprecedented. Rashan said, shaking his head. No, your gluttonous ego needs no sugared sweets after the feasts it has gorged on of late. But, Kairos paused a moment to consider, I had no intention of joining the inner circle. No intention? Rashan asked. The warlock gave Kairos a disbelieving look and slumped down to the Emperor's throne. Technically, I have no affiliation with the circle at all. I work for the Emperor directly. I would gain no authority, little prestige, and I would be burdened by sitting in on those long, pointless meetings that seem to occupy much of their time. You have no idea how many times I went to look for my Uncle Caladrius and found him embroiled in what amounted to a draw with words over some trifling matter. The whole of the inner circle attending only to look on as two of their number wasted everyone's day. I have too much to get done to take on that weighted chain, Iris said. Oh, and get off that throne. Enough folk thought that you wanted to sit there that half the circle conspired to oust you as warlock. Rashan smiled, raising his eyebrows and giving Kairos a nod to concede the point. He looked all about the room and Kairos followed his gaze. There was no one about. Rashan began to chuckle. He did not stop, but allowed the mirth to overtake him, the sound echoing throughout the audience chamber as it grew to an uproarious volume. The demon managed to hold up a hand in mock surrender to Kairos as he pushed himself to his feet, vacating the chair. Kairos found himself drawn in, laughing at, if nothing else, the spectacle before him. You win, Brannis, Rashan managed between fits. He regained some control of himself before continuing. You win. I spend so much time of late surrounded by fools and cowards that I forget why I placed you so highly. You are right, of course. I will go back to war, but I promise I will seek some pretext to cut it short, something that will satisfy everyone. Except Safshan, Brannis added. Fine, except Safshan. But they should be grateful for any quarter they are given. In the meantime, if you are intent on keeping the leash between yourself and the Emperor, regardless of who holds the end and who wears the collar, then you ought to see that he comports himself more respectably. Thus far, allowing him his debauchery has been the only thing keeping him from causing trouble at court, Kairos said with a shrug. Pitting the noble daughters against one another for sport is worse than I had expected from him. He is liable to start a small war among them before long, and I have no wish to require a sorceress to follow the objects of his amusement about to prevent bastards, Rashan said. Kairos frowned, unsure of what he meant by the last and not sure that he wanted to know. Get him fixed on one girl if you possibly can, and we can get him establishing a proper dynasty. He rather unsubtly hinted that he wanted my sister for his empress, Kairos said, noting that the residual joviality in Rashan's demeanor sizzled away like water droplets on a hot stove. Get that notion out of his head. If I wanted sorcerers ruling the empire, I could have just let the conniving traitors have their way, Rashan said. He fixed Kairos with a gaze that reminded him of the sanctum and the dozen servants who were up there with brushes, buckets, and lye, removing the remnants of the slaughtered sorcerers. Of course, Kairos agreed. I will find some way. Rashan nodded silently. The warlock's gaze drifted away from Kairos, settling nowhere in particular. So much to do. I see the empire turning, though. A great behemoth foundering in the water as we patch the holes and throw the dead weight into the sea. New sails, a fresh wind, and an able mate at the helm. That is where we go from here. Despite our captain, Kairos suggested. Very much so, Rashan agreed. I shall see you at the draw this afternoon, whether or not you change your mind in the interim. Perhaps a friendly wager over the results. Kairos leafed through mountains of documents, piling them in a rough stack as he gauged their importance. Here and there he would set one aside for leisurely perusal, but he had no time to delve into any while he ransacked his uncle's office. Are you sure you ought to be in here? Celia asked. She had wandered in as Kairos was sorting through missives which had been hidden under a stone he had pried loose. My aunt Farena is in Reaver's Crossing. She's in poor health and hates to travel. I gathered from my grandfather that Danilasis has gone to stay with her until the autumn classes start at the academy. Who else ought to see to these as next of kin, if not me? Kairos asked. He kept half his attention to the papers while he spoke. Many were written in Caladris's tilted, scratchy hand, but most were from others. There were correspondences and formal reports, several of which appeared to be in a sort of code. It would take days for Kairos to wrap his head around it all. Caladris was the one to whom he had delegated his own dark dealings. Sorting them completely out might not be possible before other actors picked apart his network of ears and eyes. "What is it you hope to find?" Celia asked. She stood over him like a disapproving nursemaid, watching her charge soil his clothing in the mud. She was past the point of stopping him, but hesitated to get close enough to dirty her own hands. "Everything. Anything. Caladris had plots within plots, and if there were plots wrapped around those, I should know of them as well. I cannot know what might happen because of his death, what contingencies he might have made. There might be plans in need of a guiding hand that we must decide to continue or quash. I would rather do so with full knowledge than let his fiefdom of lies and intrigues run amok." Kairos dug back into the papers when a thought struck him. "Thank you for directing Rashaan's wrath elsewhere," he told her.
"Of course. I explained my reasons, though."
"Well, I should like to do you a good turn. Go tell Rashaan you want to be part of the inner circle," Kairos told her. He did not look up to gauge her reaction, but in his ether vision, he could see her straighten. He took it as a sign of surprise.
"I am only fifth circle," Celia protested. "I have no place."
"Up there?" he asked. He did turn then and gestured upward, to the short set of stairs that led to the inner circle's ring of seats around the perimeter of the sanctum. "You mean that nice, sectioned chamber awash in blood by your direction? You cleared enough space for certain. I am sure you can have a spot there."
"It would be impudent. I am just an agent. I work in hallways and back rooms, not in front of the whole empire," Celia protested.
"Fine, but know that you leave vast wealth and personal power sitting there to be taken by someone else." Kairos stopped himself. Oh, would that not just be a needle in Rashaan's arse? A little smile fixed itself on Kairos's face, unbidden.
"What is that? You sounded as if you were about to say something else. What just occurred to you?"
"Nothing." Kairos shook his head clear of thoughts to summon Juliana back to Caladris so she could claim a position in the inner circle. Not only would Rashaan be irritated by that, but Juliana would hate it as well. She is more inclined to Rashaan's methods of diplomacy, though both would hate to hear that. She's better with a blade than with a quill. She honeys her words with vinegar and takes insults as well as a tavern brawler. "You should just consider taking a spot before you lose your chance. I would go now before some other sorcerer, or sorceress," Kairos teased, "thinks of it first."
"You would like to have me in the inner circle with you that much?" Celia asked, batting her eyes and smiling.
Kairos fixed her with a steady look, neither mirth nor guile muddying his intent. "No, I have no plan to take on more burdens at no gain to myself. I already run whatever parts of the empire I deem fit, excepting the circle and the army, and I could have some say over either if I chose," Kairos said. He stood and set a handful of papers on his dead uncle's desk.
"Then why..."
"From this point on, I suggest you look to your own ends. You have all that you claim to want dangling right before you. If you want control over your fate, take a place for yourself in the inner circle you slaughtered by your accusations. If you want Rashaan for yourself, have out and tell him. If you've learned nothing from him over the season and more that you served him, you ought to have learned that he prizes boldness."
"Does that mean you won't?"
Celia tried to ask, but seemed unable. "No, I will not touch you again. If you mean to make yourself Rashaan's, I should not set jealousy between us. And so long as he keeps similar thoughts from Juliana, he has no reason to fear me," Kairos lied. "Let the words that murderous bastard hears in his own bed serve my ends. What need do I have to provoke him?"
"Thank you, Kairos."
Celia leaned close and whispered. She knew how cross it made him to let drop his secret carelessly. "I hope that one name never crosses her lips in his presence."
Just go before three vipers in human form beat you to him, Kairos said. He had just stopped himself from saying other.
There you are, Brannis,
the voice bellowed after Kairos as he walked down the palace hall. He had not even needed to hear the voice to know the source of Varnas as the hulking guard captain bore down on him. He stopped and turned to face the man before half the palace was disturbed. Do we have time for this right now? Kairos asked. His arms were filled with papers that demanded his more immediate attention. The draw is in less than an hour, and I do not relish the thought of a transference spell with so many onlookers.
I would ride with you, but the Emperor is not attending, and I dare not leave the palace without him. I'll be quick, Varnas said.
He drew Kairos aside into a nearby sitting room. Kairos closed the door behind them. Neither sat. How are you and Wendell faring? Kairos asked. He set Caladrus's papers down in a chair, and spotting a tray of pastries, levitated it to him. Morning feast had been brief and inadequate.
You know the boy is gone. It's eating at Wendell, Varnas said.
He slumped into another chair, elbows resting on his knees. Kairos noticed that despite his habit of keeping clean-shaven since taking over as guard captain of the palace, Varnas wore a dazed stubble on his face.
And you too, perhaps? Kairos asked between bites of a scone. I don't care a whit for Anzik. I only saw him once or thrice. It's being around Wendell that's getting to me. The boy's fine, but that old street sorcerer is going to get us killed. We just escaped with our lives from coin blades sent by Denric Zane, Varnas said.
He was leaning forward, spanning half the distance between his chair and Kairos's.
Part ways, then. The boy was only supposed to have been a means to finding the staff of Galen. What reason do you have to stay?
Kairos studied Varnas. The man was too much a soldier, too much a guard captain. He suspected he knew why, but needed to hear Varnas say it.
And just lead them? Varnas replied. The boy seems much improved since Wendell started teaching him a bit of that street magic of his. He even helped save himself from that last group of coin blades that came after us. Set the bastard on fire.
So you have a 10-summer fire hurler on your hands, and you're being chased by every hired blade that pirate gold can buy. Balin has done no favors here. Rashan sent him to get the staff of Galen, and instead, Balin turns to kidnapping and extortion. That boy you guard has no relation to Wendell. Perhaps you ought to consider whose interests this serves.
And just give him over to those blood-crazed coin blades? Varnas asked,
straightening himself to his full, seated height. No, the coin blades already took him, or have you sworn off Soria's gang? Find some way to get him back to Denric Zane, or go your own way. Soria, Rakashi, and I are in Acardia. You can meet us there, Kairos said. He leaned back against the table to finish his scone. It was stale from the early morning and too heavily buttered, but still was preferable to the sorry story that Varnas offered. The old former Archon guard captain looked like he wanted to say something, but never did. Varnas stood and nodded to Kairos as he stalked past, wrenched the door open, and continued off into the palace halls beyond.
I once looked up to Varnas.
Kairos took a second scone and set off to reach the academy before the draws began. The shores of Dragon Lake were clothed in black as the assembled Imperial Circle gathered to either witness or partake in a great draw to determine the succession of the Inner Circle. The dark garb did no one any favors. The sun caused sorcerers who had grown soft and flabby from indoor occupations to sweat and stink. For all that, they were the finest and most prestigious assemblage in the Kadrin Empire. The odor that arose was reminiscent of the commoners' seats at a joust. From the buildings of the academy campus, there was a stretch of green grass that ran down to the waterfront before it gave way to rocks and mud. With all of the crowds, there was little of it left to be seen. Nobles and peasants alike had heard word of the great event and pressed in against the sorcerers knotted at the middle.
I find myself surprised to stand next to you, Brannis, Fenris called above the murmur of the crowd. I had assumed you would be gathered with the aspiring throng, ready to lay ruin to any who drew against you.
I was looking forward to the show, I must say.
A chill emanated from the elder sorcerer, a spell protecting him from the swelter.
Rashan would have none of it. He feared I might injure someone, Kyrus said.
Fenris scoffed, but nodded in agreement with the sentiment. He told me he would have allowed me to lay claim to the top position without contest.
I think he just worried that I would challenge him at the end.
Now that contest I would pay quite a lot to witness, Fenris said.
You know, you've grown quite the pair of gourds since you figured out your source, little brother,
Aloysia said from his other side.
You used to be quite the slick talker before you could bully to get your way.
Is that why you never learned to make friends? Because you could always get your way by force?
Kyrus asked before he thought better of it. He was surprised by the vitriol his sister, Brannis's sister, could conjure in him.
Brannis, have a care how you talk to a member of the inner circle,
Celia chided from the far side of Aloysia. Kyrus knew she was doing so to earn her way into Aloysia's graces. Rumor of Celia's own appointment to the inner circle had spread in advance of the draw, and Kyrus had heard on his way down to the lake.
You might have a care, Brannis, Aloysia warned. I have Rashan's full support. Say what you will, but he'll never see me as a rival.
He would if you became Empress, like Somic seems to want,
Kyrus muttered close to her ear. Some perverse instinct in him just wanted to dangle that bit before her.
What?
Aloysia exclaimed before lowering her voice to more private levels.
I would never stoop to spending 3 seasons abstaining from my own draw to carry some drool-witted imperial larva in my womb. If I was ever to get with child by that buffoon, I'd suck its source dry before the first glimmer I saw, and be out with it at my next moonflow.
Good to know we are of an accord on that point, at least.
Rashan has charged me with dissuading him from pursuing the matter, but it comforts me to hear he would get nowhere with it, Kyrus whispered to her. It had been more information than he had wished to hear from his own sister, but he knew he had deserved it. As much as Aloysia and Celia were opposites in demeanor, Aloysia and Juliana shared that trait. Both knew how to shame a man by the careful use of indiscreet language on female subjects. Kyrus waited restlessly for the draws to begin. He had places he wished to be, tasks that needed his attention. There was no avoiding the spectacle of the draw. He was too prominent and was expected to attend.
Rashan will leave tonight. I shall as well once he has gone.
Kyrus had made up his mind. There were pieces of the puzzle of Rashan that were lost to him, and he needed to find them. Dolvain had predicted that Kyrus and Rashan would not be able to coexist indefinitely.
I could outdraw him, perhaps even handily.
At first it appeared as if the contest would continue for days. Scores of sorcerers lined up to sign their names to the list of entrants. By their sources, Kyrus knew that many of them were doing it as a lark. Draws were infrequent because of the sanctioning required, and no doubt some simply sought to settle old grudges. Rashan must have suspected the same, for he issued a proclamation to reduce the number. I view the frivolous use of my time as an affront. Any sorcerer who does not claim at least one of the top 10 positions in this afternoon's event, I will slay. Any who have written their names upon this list who wish to reconsider their entry may do so now. After a polite, orderly stampede to remove mistaken entries, the field was left at just 8 contestants. Guardsmen from the Tower of Contemplation herded the crowd back to a safe distance so that the draws might begin. Rashan stood in sole judgment of the contests. Despite his earlier suggestion of a wager with Kyrus, he made no attempt to arrange any.
It would have been poor form anyway, Kyrus conceded to himself.
The first of the draws was between 2 sorcerers Kyrus did not know well. Anthe Gardarus was a third circle, who looked as if he was bent at the shoulder like a fishhook. His opponent, Domel Winstach, was also third circle. He was Magrin-born, but had remained loyal and fought for Cadrin in the Magrin Rebellion. All eyes that could were turned to the ether at the command of draw. Kyrus watched the first draw he had ever attended as a spectator with childish anticipation. At first he thought the 2 competitors were feeling one another out,
just drawing a trickle of ether. He grew suspicious when they tried no harder, thinking they might both be trying to advance by some prearrangement, putting up a show of effort while one of them took an easy victory and a fresh source into future contests. Eventually the truth dawned. This is their best. It was a sinking realization. I am thrice the distance from them and could steal all the ether they tug at. Is this all? Kyrus whispered to Fenris, hopeful of some reassurance from an elder perspective.
You are a different creature than these,
Fenris's wheezy whisper answered back. Kyrus watched with waning interest as the hold was called and the two weakling sorcerers stood holding a teacup's fill of ether at bay with the mightiest of efforts. There was little promise of much better. Kyrus had seen the sources of those sorcerers whose names still graced the lists. Some were stronger, some weaker, but only by a degree. There was none who would give a show, unless by chance some sorcerer had a draw out of all proportion to their source. Since he was stuck watching regardless, Kyrus hoped that was the case. A burst of steaming water broke the surface of Dragon Lake, signaling the victory of Domhnall Windstatch. There were far more bouts to be had, but the Kadrin Empire was treading the first steps along the path to a foreign-blooded Inner Circle sorcerer. Unless we count Iridan being demon-blooded.
I could suck the ether dry from his source and hold it all season,
Kyrus muttered to no one in particular. In fact, he had not intended to put voice to it at all. Nonetheless, it was heard.
Yes, you're a freakish monster who's probably blocking the view of everyone behind you with that source of yours. Now shut up about it,
Aloysia chided him in a harsh whisper. Kyrus did remain quiet. As he watched, his feet grew sore and his back began to ache. He resisted the temptation to use magic since everyone around him was abstaining. He wondered how many would have followed if he had given in, but never tested it. In the end, there were three new Inner Circle sorcerers chosen. Domhnall Windstatch had taken the third spot, the one that only existed because of Kyrus's refusal to take the spot he was offered. Second place went to Ariel Sarmon, who was a younger cousin of Phelan. The top ranking had gone to Pola Grawl, a sorcerer who the Circle had stationed in Hafen until the need of an airship crew had dragged him away. It was only by fortune that his ship was docked in Kadrus when the call came for the great tournament of draws. Kyrus made his perfunctory introductions as the winners were marched around to meet the surviving Inner Circle members, who were now their colleagues. Kyrus was included alongside the Circle's elite, even though he had not joined them. He was someone who important folk needed to know.
I am also possibly the last one truly working against Roshan.
Once Roshan had departed, back for whatever misfortune-rife region of Safshan had gained his attention, Kyrus hastened back to his familial home. It was not a long walk from the academy, as both lay on the shores of Dragon Lake in the city's northern outskirts, but evening was falling by the time he arrived. Solaran Estate was in disarray from Caladrus's death, but it was quieter than the palace and Kyrus no longer had his offices at the army headquarters for a refuge. He delved down into the cellars and found a nice, barren space in one of the less-used larders. He sat down on a pile of emptied grain sacks and quieted his mind. Thoughts of the day swirled within, yammering for attention with details small and large, things that needed his mind to grind and worry over. In the windowless depths below ground level, Kyrus lost track of how long it was before he gave in. He told his mind to shut up. There was difficult magic to manage ahead, the sort that could kill him, or at least get him lost once more should he enact it in error. He took deep breaths, deep, thought-clearing breaths.
What are you doing down here, boy?
Axterion's crotchety voice startled him alert. His grandfather came across the larder with a steaming bowl of soup in his hands, the contents washing back and forth dangerously as the old man shuffled across the uneven floor. The smell of tomatoes and spices wafted in with him.
I was preparing for a trip, Kyrus answered.
He saw no reason to lie to the old man.
Ah, I've got you, Axterion said with a wink.
He handed Kyrus the bowl. the thick crockery keeping the piping hot contents from burning his hands.
"Well, if you mean to see that demon, best of luck to you."
"I do, and thank you."
"Oh, and if you do not return by morning, I'll make up the most fiendishly embarrassing lies about where you've gone. You shall find no stauncher guardian of your secret, nor a more lax defender of your honor, my boy."
The two shared a laugh before Axterion departed. Kairos ate the soup, the only real meal he had eaten all day. He set the empty bowl aside in a corner, well away from where his spell would work. He took his time drawing in the ether he would need for his trip, lest he cause alarm. When he had enough, he lifted gently off the ground and disappeared in a ball of opaque ether.